Hello, this is The Link Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com in channel pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. You want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
And we're back. It's Tuesday night, and it is the Linux Show broadcasting you live for, what is it, our sixth year on the air. Amazing. 2003. I just cannot believe that we've actually started the sixth year. But it is January 7th. It's 8 o'clock here in Chicago. Kevin and I are once again broadcasting live to the known universe. We have most of the crew with us tonight. Doc is not hooked up yet, but I'm sure he'll be joining us shortly. I know he's convention bound. He's at the Mac convention right now. But we do have Arnie with us. Arnie, how are you doing this evening?
Doing fine. It's half of Ontario is blown west towards LA the last few days, and we're trying to pick up the pieces here still. We were getting 100 mile an hour winds out of, well, Santa Ana wind machine was running out of the desert. And
wow.
Yeah,
100 mile an hour.
Ontario got hit the hardest of all, about the hardest.
Wow, that's pretty scary.
Yeah, it was pretty well. No trees in our yard, but there's a yard full of branches and we're digging things out.
You have no trees?
We got no trees got fell
oh,
wiped
okay.
out.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, boy,
we got two great big trees in the backyard and two in the front.
Gotta have trees. Gotta have trees to hide from other people.
But especially in the LA, where in the LA area here, where there's never any clouds.
I mean, if you don't have a tree, you can't jump out of the tree and bite rabbits on the back of their neck.
That's right.
That's right, you know.
Although I can't, I just, you know, boggles the mind why anybody would want to do that.
Now, are we going to call you Smeagol from now on?
Carnivore, that's why.
Yeah.
On the opposite.
Of course, they do have those lions out here, you know, so, you know.
You mean the pumas and the crevasses?
The pumas, yeah.
Yeah. The pumas and the crevasses. Got to watch.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those crevasses too.
Yeah.
Right.
That's right. Absolutely. On the other end of our nation, we've got Russ Pavlicek in the D.C. area. How are you doing tonight, Russ?
Oh, I'm holding up the other end, I'll tell you. Out here inside beautiful snow-covered Maryland, where the light dusting that was projected for this weekend somehow turned into about 4.5 inches.
My sister got 3 feet. One day, and then the second storm came through and dumped 2 more feet. And I have not been able to call her in upstate New York for 5 days. Her phone is still disconnected.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing, is that we've been on the periphery of everything. We haven't had a direct hit. But even still, we've had something like 4 times the amount of snow we would normally have had thus far in the year.
And we've had almost none. And that's freaky. In fact, here in Chicago, we've had the weirdest weather trend, and we've had 50 to almost 60 degree days in late December, and then it'll snow for a couple of days, and then we'll have another 50 degree day. And so right now, our total accumulation for the year so far is maybe 1.5 to 2 inches. It's hardly anything.
Wow.
By this time, normally, we've got, you know, 2 to 3 feet of snow standing in the ground for the rest of the winter. It just doesn't go away, but we've got nothing. I haven't even shoveled my driveway yet this year, and that's a first.
Wow. Yeah, we had the exact opposite, because I think they said for this area, normally we would have less than 3 inches by now in the winter, and we've had something like over a foot all told. So it's been...
Well, maybe it'll keep the people in Congress from doing anything.
I don't think it takes the weather to do that. I think they're very good at not doing anything.
The less they do, the better off we all are, it appears. So, and, of course, Kevin and I are here in the Chicago area broadcasting live, as usual. And hopefully this show will not be a train wreck. It's going to be a little bit unusual in that we're going to be having, during the second segment, a hacker test where we're going to provide an IP number for anyone listening to the show, and we'll send it on out to the IRC and post it for half an hour or so on our website, an IP number of a server where we are inviting you to have at it and attack the server and try and break through it. We do ask that if you do get through the firewall that you do not do anything terribly damaging. Go ahead and post a message to make it obvious that you've hacked through. Should anybody actually hack through, please email us here at staff@thelinuxshow.com, and you will win wonderful prizes for accomplishing this hack test of our guest during the second half. Hopefully his product will stand up and none of you will be able to hack into it. But we'll see. Haven't got the IP number yet, or we'd give it to you now. Russ, if you do get an email with that IP number, please break in, and we'll announce it as soon as we get the IP number, okay?
Okay. One of our guests has already loaded his crossbow with Nmap.
Well, get ready. I don't care what you do to it, because it's not on our network. That must be Doc.
Yes, me. I'm actually calling from Linux Care Sputnik headquarters.
Oh, really?
San Francisco, yeah.
Tell the folks at Linux Care I send my regards.
Yes. Yeah, I think this is all Sputnik right here, though. But it's the former Linux Care headquarters. Linux Care is here, too, but I don't understand, but that doesn't matter.
Well, it's basically where Sifri's desk is. He's just changed the company name.
Yes, I think that's true. I think that's true. That's true.
Yes,
are we on the air yet?
Yeah, we're on the air right now.
Oh, cool.
So,
hi, guys.
So, hi, Doc.
I have to quit eating now. I just took a taxi over here, so it's...
Well, you continue chewing. We'll go to one of the other people while you're chewing, because I know you've got a lot of interesting things to...
Not too many, but some.
Yeah, but a lot of the news I've read out of the Mac show was pretty interesting. But we'll go ahead and jump on over to Russ. Russ, have you got some hot tidbits this week?
Oh, yeah, we do. And this one is, of course, one of the biggest ones, and that's the DECSS. Deal in Norway. For people who hadn't heard it, and I'm sure there's probably no one who hasn't heard it by now, the young man who did the horrible, terrible, unthinkable thing of wanting to watch his DVD on his Linux laptop has been acquitted.
John Leish Johansson.
You're a better man than I. And
I believe it's Jan Johansson, but that's fine.
Okay.
But he has been acquitted, and it was interesting about this because obviously this was meant to be a show trial by the RIAA and their associates trying to show that, you know, what happens when these evil hackers do nasty things.
Was it the MPAA in this case?
Yes, they were.
Yeah, it was MPAA.
Yeah.
So you got to...
My
keep your evils straight.
That's it.
They're all one. They all come out of the same box.
Actually, they don't. But in this.
Wow! Look at the corporations that support RIAA, and look at the corporations that support the MPAA, and you decide whether they come out of the same box or not.
Right.
Well, no. There are some subtle differences, Artie.
Oh yeah, okay. One has some small companies that produce records, and the other one has some small.
Well, no. The Motion Picture Association seems to have a better grasp, slightly, of the reality that they're facing.
That's why they just lost in Norway.
Well, I think the reason why they lost in Norway actually is that much to the total amazement of most of us here inside the U.S. They appear to have a court that has a clue, and can actually think for themselves and not do as dictated. and realize that this is a young man who's simply trying to use a piece of property which he purchased so that he can watch his movie, which he paid money for, on his laptop without stealing anything, without trying to be a criminal. And the court said, yeah, that's right. That's exactly what happened.
Yep, and you're exactly right, Russ, but I want you to focus in on your own comment. Your comment was, this is a court that happened or that took place in Oslo, not in the United States.
That's it.
Okay?
No, it was a criminal case.
Yes, it was a criminal case.
Yeah, and what's interesting, of course, is on Flashdot, where never do people jump to confusions. It's the home of confusion, jumping into confusions. But there is some thread on there. I haven't been able to read all the messages, but there's talk about an appeal, of course. The man was acquitted of a criminal case, and I would think that in Norway, just like in the United States, there are laws against double jeopardy and we think that once you're acquitted, there's no appeal.
That's correct in terms of a criminal.
But that's what this was
right.
A criminal case.
But a criminal case in Oslo has nothing to do with a secondary criminal case in Southern California.
Right.
Should this kid ever walk onto the soil of the United States they want to take a run at him, they're perfectly within their legal rights. They have the law on their side at the moment to do so with a domestic case.
Right.
This ruling has no holding, no foundation in law here in the United States at all. It's a moral victory.
And it's actually, I think it's a lot more than that. And, you know, I heard some commentary suggesting that, you know, Norway is not part of, as I understand it, the formal European Union, and so it has no force of law beyond the country itself. However, at a time when countries are looking at adopting these laws, and some people inside the U.S. are kind of questioning the whole DMCA, I think it's very important that there is, you know, this rather clear, and I mean totally clear, win. I think that's tremendous that it happened now and not a year from now.
Well, yeah, and there's a fundamental thing about this case. And by the way, for everybody listening, there is a link to the however you pronounce it, Aftenposten or whatever, some Norwegian newspaper. We've got a link to on our website. But anyways, the issue really, when it came down to it, is that the MPA didn't prove their case, that they could not show criminal intent. And that's all they did. That's the case they lost, is they could not show criminal intent. And so in terms of setting a major precedent about the validity of the law, it does nothing. It does absolutely nothing. The only thing that it does is it proves that this young man, John, had no criminal intent. That simple. I disagree that this is a major, huge, precedent-setting victory for software writers around the world.
Well, no, it's not in the legal sense, but I think that at a time when there's a lot of discussion going on, it's very important that we can at least not just say, well, you know, it's our word versus the MPAA that this kid was out to do, you know, reasonable things.
Of course, one zip. That's
right.
What we can say.
Well, you know, one of the things you could do here is compare what we might be saying if he had been held culpable. I mean then we would be talking about an entirely different thing, and it's entirely gratifying that didn't happen. But you know there's a gray area between those two, and it's really really him being totally acquitted. I mean, there could have been all sorts of other things happen here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was a clear acquittal. And I would think that lawmakers in other countries are going to see this and pay attention. You know, if he would have been held culpable, then wow, that would have been bad. Yeah,
well, hopefully, you know, litigation costs money, and it slows that down. It's a good thing.
Yep. But this wasn't a civil case. This was a criminal case.
Yeah, but hopefully, this guy's got smart parents who realize that they did just clearly win a criminal finding of fact, at least in Norway, and they're now beginning civil litigation against the MPAA, who they could find all kinds of damages now for the things that they did in prosecution of the criminal case. I mean, they came in and busted up the kid's nose, caused all kinds of havoc to his family. It was a pretty miserable thing for his family to go through for the last 3 years. And so I'm quite sure, it would have to be rabbits with half a brain not to follow the obvious path towards civil litigation on this one. So, Russ, any more stories? This is a good one, though.
Yeah, there was a nice one done by Grant Gross, who was on the last show I think we had, about comparing TCO for Linux and Windows, and he does a magnificent job talking about some of the issues, including some of the ones that don't seem to get much press. And the link for this, by the way, is on the front page of the Linux Show webpage. But one of the points that Grant brings out in this article is something that I've heard ever since I started attending Linux conferences back as far as 1997. The first Atlanta Linux showcase I was hearing this, and that's two basic things. One is that one administrator can administer more Linux boxes than one administrator can administer Windows boxes. And the second is that one Linux box can do more work than one Windows box generally. So suddenly when you add those numbers into the mix, cost of administration of Linux systems drops way, way down, because every administrator is basically handling much more of a workload on the Linux side than can be handled comfortably on the Windows side.
And one of the things that Gross makes is they also do that easier and cheaper.
Yep.
And that's the whole nine yards. If Microsoft is going to insist on inflating the figures by making the administration of the boxes, you know, the prevalent, you know, cost, you know, downplaying their licensing costs, which are hideous, by the way, any way you look at it, then fine. All right, let's play that game. One thing, that was one of my stories of the week, too, and it's a great article. It's on ZDNet, TechNet, Tech Update, and it's a very good article, and he really does a great job of taking down the Microsoft fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with conclusions of the article as well. And interesting enough, the take I took from the article was similar to some of the comments that have been made in our incredibly intelligent IRC chat room, and that all of the IDC evaluations up to this point on TCO have completely ignored the impact of the embedded Linux explosion of 2 years ago. And that now, after we had this embedded Linux explosion a couple of years ago, we are now, during the last 12 months, seeing lots and lots and lots of Linux appliances showing up at trade shows, where you really don't see Windows appliances. You see Linux appliances. And these Linux appliances typically sell for around, $1,000, $1,400, something in that general price area, and they're utility email servers that can handle 500 to 1,000 users, and they can be administered by a secretary. And there's nothing like that. Nothing like that on the Windows side of the market that I have certainly seen. And none of those types of devices, and there's a ton of them on the market now, are being taken into consideration. So, I mean, let's compare, a 1,000-desk company running Exchange. You know, you're looking at $10,000 worth of hardware and licenses, plus you're looking at least one MCSE to maintain it, versus $1,000 for a Linux appliance and a secretary being paid $30,000. I mean, the TCO on that is a joke. And none of these evaluations up to this point have taken the impact of embedded Linux and its growth. It's becoming pervasive in the development of technology. So, but cool story, though.
Yeah, very much.
Any more?
I've got a couple of quickies, too, to finish out with. One is over at Linux Today. There was one that, it was dated January 4th, and it's called The Economic Times Linux Government Scene Creating Monopoly, which is really kind of a lousy title. But basically, the important point about this is that over in India, even after the hundreds of millions of promised Microsoft dollars, they are indeed looking at going with a substantial open source presence within the country. And I know that we have been saying that was going to be the case. I wrote that inside one of my columns a few weeks ago, and I got some mail from people saying, that's never going to be the case. You just watch. They're going to roll over like nothing. Well, here it is. It's a month after the fact, and I don't see people rolling over. And that's excellent news as far as that's concerned. And the other quickie is just the pointer to Halloween 8, which gives us a little bit of idea of how Microsoft is reacting to some of the damage control that they're now facing, which actually fits very well with some of the stuff going on in India.
Yeah, have you all read that?
I have.
Kudos to Eric for participating in a well thought out piece of work going after some real details.
Well, someone inside's is leaking stuff to Eric. That's good.
Yeah,
Eric gets
plus
a chance.
He's got people working on it with him.
That's good. I mean, and he does a good. That's a good service. And
yeah, he's got a team of people working with him on it. But if you scan down towards the bottom third of that document, and the comments are all color coded, you can quickly identify where the comments are coming from. The Microsoft insider saying, "Well, this just has not worked for us, and we have completely failed on this, and what we really need to do is be nice to the open source people." it's really funny that this has not been working for them. And even they have come to the realization that this tactic is of perpetual fear and doubt is not working. I think this TCO battle that they've been waging the last 4 months or so is their last holdout. Here's something that will be interesting about Halloween 7 and the future of this analysis is whether the actual executives themselves will take note of what their own people are saying inside, that the FUD is not working, that it's backfiring, and whether that will get them to cease and desist, or if they'll go ahead and do it anyways. I frankly cannot imagine Steve Ballmer keeping his mouth shut. I don't ever see it happening. So,
well, the other piece to that, quite frankly, is that they need something that they can do. You know, I mean, they're not the type to sit there and watch the market erode. And part of the problem that they have right now is that they don't have a really effective strategy for dealing with this. FUD is near at hand, and
it's
cheap. It gives them something to do. But they don't really have other public ways of going head to head, and at least nothing that's worked. So I don't think that they're going to back off anytime soon.
Ross, how do you read their look at the marketplace? I mean, sure, we've seen all the marketing studies and stuff saying, oh, Linux is doing this, and Linux, but we all know that those are based on sales of Linux. And what do you think that Microsoft really sees? I mean, they probably are acutely aware of what the market is doing their market is doing.
Right. It's difficult. I think that what they probably see is their own sales rates. You know, I mean, think about it. Inside the past year, they've put together plans to basically try to force their customers to go to these, inside some cases, extremely expensive licenses, the new version of licensing out there and so forth, to get them to come up to the latest versions of software, because there are lots and lots of people out there using non-current versions of Microsoft products, and they want revenue from all these people. So they came up with this whole nice plan, complete with Office 11 supposedly coming up this year, which is not going to be backward compatible with a lot of the older Microsoft operating systems.
Yeah, it'll only run on 2000 and XP, and that's it.
Yeah, so...
Furthermore, it's XML-based, so the document base is entirely different.
Right, exactly. And, you know, a lot of this stuff, that plus the licensing, they're trying to get people to upgrade, and getting them to upgrade means that they're going to bring in revenue. Now, I can imagine that when they put this whole plan together, they had expectations about what the revenue figures would look like. And quite frankly, I think those are probably the numbers that they're looking at. And especially since, you know, we're hearing that there are a lot of organizations that just aren't stepping in line, or maybe they're doing the minimum to hold the line while they look at other options, including OpenOffice, StarOffice, and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest with this. This is brilliance on the part of Microsoft. This is like walking into somebody's home and saying, I'm sorry, but, you know, your refrigerator, you have to buy this new upgraded ice maker, and you have to buy this new upgraded water filter, or we're going to unplug your refrigerator, and what's worse is we're going to charge you the same amount of money as if you bought a totally new refrigerator. I mean, this is brilliant. Brilliant strategy on the part of Microsoft of forcing the market when they really don't have a product to sell.
And the attorney generals of the states gave up when the company is still doing crap like that.
Well,
I can jump in here and take this in one of a couple of different directions. Are we close to a break, or should I?
No, go ahead.
Hold forth. It was interesting today as I came to Macworld and entered the reality distortion field that is the Steve Jobs keynote zone. And sitting a couple rows in front of me was Stephen Levy and David Pogue. David Pogue's the columnist for the New York Times, and Stephen Levy for Newsweek and a lot of other things. You know, he wrote the Hacker's book.
He wrote the Hacker's book.
And lots of books. He's a really good guy. But I remember when Windows 95 came out, he called it a nuclear-tipped scud targeted for Cupertino. And what Jobs did today was a bunch of nuclear-tipped scuds targeted for Redmond. It was pretty interesting. A lot of it wasn't Linux-related, but it showed how far, how much the Office suite, for example, has languished. I mean, nothing's happened with PowerPoint in years, right? And what
PowerPoint is still a 16-bit application.
Yeah, and it's also not a reliable application. It never has been. And what Jobs showed, one of the things they showed was something called Keynote, which is a really a next generation presentation package. I mean, it just moved it off to another place. But basically, it's something that it hurts Microsoft. One place where they, you know, where it matters for them was is in, you know, in the office suite where people make presentations. You know, they've been doing it with PowerPoint forever, and here's something that's hugely better in a lot of ways. But the big one, really, and this is there was a Linux and open source play on this one, is the is this new browser Safari, which is based on KHTML, which is basically Conqueror. It's KDE. It's a KDE thing. They basically leveraged KDE code, and they did a whole bunch of new stuff to it, and they're very happily turning that back over to the community. And part of it is that, you know, they really want to see, you know, the guys I spoke to there anyway, they want to see new browser stuff happening out of this. I mean, they move the browser ahead. The new browser they've got is fast. It's really fast, and it works. It works very, very well, and it's got some innovative, you know, ways of doing bookmarks and some other things. But the cool thing is that basically they went to the open source community, they chose what, at least to them, was a kind of a best in breed, and they implemented it, and they turned stuff back, and they basically threw it in Microsoft's face. The best browser, as far as, you know, a lot of people who are at that show today is concerned, is now, you know, is now this one. You know, it's basically a KDE derivative. Kind of interesting. You know, that's... So that was A, and B was the other big sort of open source announcement they made was implementing the X windowing system, X11, on there. So they made a lot out of that as well. That actually wasn't part of Steve Jobs' keynote, but it was, you know, it was a big part of why they wanted me to come in and talk to Avi Tavanian, which I did. And what he told me was, you know, they wanted to do the best in breed Java, and they wanted to do the best in breed GCC, and they wanted to do the best in breed other things, and X Windows is one of them. So they really like what they did with X, and so there's this whole sort of Unix-y side to what they're doing, and they wanted me at least to know that they were very interested in having the Linux world know about that. You know, so anyway. So that was sort of interesting. That's one thing. But the other thing, I want to go back to India for a second. I've been getting lots of mail and contact from people in India, and I wanted to point to a company called... This is the opposite of where Apple's going, which is always upscale, right? This is a company called Emergic, EMERGIC.com. It's run by a guy named Rajesh Jain. And he was a publisher over there or something like that. But anyway, he sold out, and he started this company called Emergic. And basically, his goal is extremely cheap Linux PCs, largely leveraging the cast-off. I mean, it's not so much white boxes. It's like old name boxes and white boxes as well as brand-new boxes. But basically, it's got a whole scheme. I mean, it's not worth going into too far, but the interesting point about it is the whole idea behind it is making the most of two things that are going on over there right now. One is just an enormous amount of developer interest in Linux. People can't it doesn't matter what Bill Gates said over there. They can't afford it. They can't afford XP. You know, the more Gates wants to lock down XP and make it impossible to use unless you call the headquarters and you pay the money... You know, these guys used to pay zero for Windows. They're buying it on the black market, you know. So, you know, Linux is, just a natural alternative in any case, just based on cost. But as a friendly development environment, they're all over it. And this guy is just one figure among many who's, you know, being very, very resourceful about making use of available building materials, as it were. Pretty neat. There's some really neat stuff going on over there. It's really huge.
I've always thought there was a good market for the used equipment that's being surplus. I mean, there's a huge amount of it after 2 or 3 years. I mean, I just stripped out a P2B, a Pentium 2 motherboard out of my big box here, and I'm upgraded it to a P4 now. But I'm putting that P2 somewhere else. But, you know, I wonder how many of these computers end up just in the dumpster.
Oh, a lot of them, but, you know, he's saying that, you know, a used PC might be running about $100, $100 to $150 in a lot of places. And they're perfectly good Linux terminals, essentially.
But better than that, I mean, a P2B is a pretty darn good machine.
Mm-hmm.
With a 400 megahertz Pentium 2, that thing cranks still.
Right. Right. So anyway, so that's sort of like the two extremes that I've sort of been following. You know, one is just this unbelievably resourceful movement going on in India. It has nothing, I mean, Gates thing was all publicity. There's just reality going on over there in a huge way.
Yep.
Huge way. It's really big.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that it's a free market economy, unlike China. You know, I mean, Microsoft's kind of lost out in a lot of ways in China, but they're up against, you know, a government that's sort of dead set against them. But in India, it's a little bit more, we got a democracy here, we got a free market economy here, we'll talk to you, we'll talk to these other guys, we'll let nature take its course. And nature is taking its course there right now.
And it happens fast.
It's happening fast.
That's the remarkable thing, is that so many people in the post-Gates trip where he, you know, dropped near $500 million on the Indian education system, everybody presumed, okay, well, deal's done. He's succeeded once again like what he did in Peru. But, you know, we're only a couple months later now, and the impact of that trip is almost totally gone.
Right, it's nothing.
And he really hasn't succeeded that strongly in Peru.
And he's
either.
Only committed the money, too. I mean, who knows, you know, really.
You know, for him, it really doesn't matter because it's a tax write-off.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a tax write-off. It's a false gift.
Mm-hmm.
He's acting all altruistic that I'm coming to you and giving you this money. He's avoiding taxes. Come on, let's tell the truth.
Right.
Very. Going along with this sort of Apple thread doc, I'd like to see if you got any of the buzz while you were there today. There was an announcement over the weekend, and then it really pretty much hit all of the news sites today about the prediction that Linux has probably already passed up Macs in total number of desktop users. But for sure, just based upon major manufacturers' numbers, forget you know, the free downloads and stuff like that, just based upon major manufacturers' numbers and the impact of things like the efforts going on at Walmart, Linux is going to hit something like 1.7% of the desktops this year. And those are pretty firm numbers, and that passes Macintosh. And a lot of the Macintosh news websites were totally freaking out today about the fact that Linux had passed them up. And they were incensed that how could Apple let this happen?
Huh.
So I was just wondering if that dialogue was going on at all at the expo, but it seems to me just the opposite, that it seems to me that the brain trust at Apple is looking upon the success of Linux as a potential coattail to jump on.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's all, once again, it's and logic, it's not or logic. It's not lost on them that for, I mean, like 35% of their sales right now, and it's going up to 50%. Jobs said today are laptops. Okay, they're basically a laptop company right now. They make desktops for vertical markets like film production and publishing and stuff like that. But those are the people those are the verticals that are primarily buying the desktops and the towers and stuff like that. And they've got a little bit of a server business, but not much. But their laptop business is huge. And it's not lost on them that a lot of those laptops are going into settings where there's, you know, a Linux server and, you know, or a Linux desktop, for that matter. You know, there are a lot of Linux users that are using another Unix box to do their laptop shit. And that's where where it's one of the many places that Apple's selling those things, and they see it as entirely a synergic kind of thing. I the way they see it, I think, is that they may not be at the very center of the open source community, but they see themselves as part of the open source community. They're Unix guys, the people who are running that company in at least in the development, these are Unix guys.
Then they need to tell their users that.
Well, here's and then I can't get, it's very hard to get a straight answer, and some not a straight answer, but their PR is very highly controlled, and that's just that to me. That's one of the, I guess it's by some respects it's an upside, but it's to me as a reporter it's kind of a downside. You just feel everybody's anus getting tight, when the topic goes off message. You just see it. And it's, you just want to give everybody a bunch of drinks and say, loosen up, but they're, one guy didn't want me to take his picture because I would clear it with PR. He was afraid. It's just a, that I might read his badge and then put his name next to a picture and it would not have gone through PR or something like that. Now, I mentioned that to a PR person and they're not freaking. That's his mistake. But nonetheless, there is a bit of a paranoia thing going on there. So that makes them unusual in our community, but nonetheless, they're at a certain level. There's a lot more in common between the Linux world than those guys and the Microsoft world. So at least I think that's the way they feel engineering wise. They're in that community. They're trying to use and develop and hand over a bunch of open source code.
Yep. Are you going to be following up with any of the people you interviewed today?
At least one of them.
Okay,
at least one of them.
Because here's something that I was getting a fair amount of correspondence today from people on the announcement of the browser.
Mm.
And a lot of people think, well, it's very cool that Apple has really now done something that is very overt, very obvious. They've taken KDE, they've ported it to the Macintosh, rewritten it, tweaked it, made it a hell of a lot prettier, and then put that back into the community. Okay, well, the community doesn't have any Macintosh. We're Linux users. Okay, so now that code has to be reported back to Linux. If they really want to do something good, I've seen a lot of comments made today. If Apple wants to really be participant in this, then be a real participant. Don't just take, but really give. Let's see a QuickTime Linux client.
That's another thing.
Real.
And I'm going to talk. There's somebody I'm going to talk to about that tomorrow because there's one developer. If you go to space.com, there's a program called Starry Night, runs on Mac and Windows. There's an OS X version. I spent probably an hour today talking with the hacker who built that. And it's very portable code. It's a beautiful program. It's an absolutely beautiful program. He wants to put it on Linux. But the thing is that there's a lot of dependence the way the program's designed involves QuickTime. Involves doing stuff with QuickTime. And then he wants to see QuickTime for Linux. It's not there yet, and until it is there, he's not going to do it. He says it's a very very quick job to do it. But,
they keep on dragging their feet on it. This is not something that could not be done quickly.
Yeah.
Starry Night is one of the best amateur astronomy programs on
the
system.
Absolutely. There are two of them. One's called Voyager, and the other one's called Starry Night. And I like them both, but... Starry Night is very, very, very cool. And it's better all the time. It just gets better all the time.
Well, I hope you hammer your favorite Apple executive on that question. Because that's probably 70% of the emails that I got during the course of the day, because I made a couple of miscellaneous postings around the Internet today about it, and all of the follow-up email was, yeah, but when are they going to do a QuickTime for us? Let's get real.
Right,
and so the awareness of the entire Linux community on this sore issue is there.
They brought up Jabber with them today, too. Because I know they're doing stuff with Jabber, but they don't want to talk. And clearly, they still didn't want to talk. So, you know, but they could do something really bold and great with IM. There's no doubt about it. You know, I mean...
And Jabber is the best platform for that, because it's open.
Absolutely. I mean, they could get out there and say, you know, we're... Instead of just, you know, we're making this compatible with AIM, who gives a shit, really? You know, I mean... Make it
compatible with AIM so that AO smell changes the spec again.
Yeah, exactly. Our internal combustion is compatible with steam. You know, stop it. You know, it's just not, doesn't matter. You know, come out with something that makes use of an open standard, you know. Have fun with it. Anyway, but that's you know, and I get a feeling that there's something happening there, but they're hard to read. You know, on that one. I don't care.
I'm going to have to break in here for 1 second. I do believe our guest has called in for segment number two. Are you there?
Yes, I am. This is Bob.
Guys, I actually have to break away.
Okay.
So,
okay. Go ahead, Doc.
See you. Thanks a lot, guys. See you later.
Goodbye. Bob?
Yes?
Do you have an IP number for us?
Not yet. I'm having a little hardware problem, which, unfortunately, I'm rearranging my system. I may be close to getting it. You know, working, but...
Okay, as soon as you've got an IP number for us, could you holler?
Absolutely.
Either email or just break in, but we'll go ahead and continue on and I'll give you a few more minutes to work on it. And we'll get back to you, okay? Let's continue on. Arnie, do you have any stories of the week?
Well, there's a couple that I had on my list that Russ picked up on. There is continued... report, this one is from eWeek, about Microsoft supporting Linux. Of course, everything Microsoft says they're going to do that. But this one is the first one that I've heard that this is, that you know, makes me think that maybe behind the scenes they're playing some games with it, at least. This guy's name is Peter Gall. Gully, G-A-L-L-I, is on eWeek, Linux Looms for Microsoft, January 6, 2003. His take on it is that Microsoft is going to have to do it because basically that what's happening in the market is that Linux is taking enough market share that they're maybe approaching to be on par with Mac. And, of course, Mac has a very different type of market than Linux desktop might have. And that basically that as Linux penetrates the market to that level, that it doesn't make any sense for Microsoft not to at least port some apps to Microsoft,
yeah.
I mean to Linux, rather. And that's I kind of agree with that take on there. Microsoft is going to have to do something.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious with what's going on with the most recent generation of the Office product being developed in the direction of XML.
Yeah.
That you're most definitely going to see a relatively easy and painless port to Linux of the Office product. And it becomes an issue of when they're throwing away market. And I keep on going back to this point whenever this discussion comes up, that there's a big difference between the Mac market and the Linux market. The Mac market is definitely a vertical market. The Linux market is not a vertical market. It is
definitely
broad,
not.
It's a broad spread market. But still, even though the Mac market is a vertical market, who is the largest software vendor within that vertical market? It's Microsoft.
That's right.
And so they are manufacturing Internet Explorer, Outlook Express, Office and lots of other products specifically for a vertical market that comprises somewhere around 1.4, 1.5, 1.6% of the desktop marketplace. Primarily, like Doc said, primarily high-end laptop users are buying this productivity software. And so they're looking upon that community as being something that they have to pursue or lose profitability. And so obviously, if the numbers of known purchases are going to hit 1.7% sometime in calendar year 2003, and what are the estimates? There's 2 to 3 times the number of Linux users. There's 2 to 3 times more actual Linux users based upon sales figures because of all the free downloads. It's something like that is the number that I've heard. And so we know for a fact that by 2003 it's going to hit 1.7%, but it's far more likely to be around 4%.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing
it's
too.
It's far more likely, but it's unprovable.
Yeah,
okay.
But they
know they've got the statistics to prove 1.7%, but they know for every copy of Linux that they sell, there's 2 or 3, you know, freebies going out.
Well, you know, Jeff, I'm going to disagree with you, and I'll tell you why. I think that I would be absolutely astounded if in the next 18 months Microsoft does anything on Linux.
Yeah, the predictions in this article is like 2 years from now.
It's 2005.
Yeah, well, even then, I think it's going to be, that would be a nosebleed case, because the bottom line here is this. Microsoft makes money in 2 areas, operating system and Office. If they provide Office for Linux, they will accept what is now a not overly large amount of lost revenue for Office. They will gain back maybe a couple percent of Office, but they will at the same time escalate their loss in Windows.
That's probably true.
And that escalation of loss for the next while is going to be much greater than anything they will gain back by doing Linux Office. The second thing about it just has to do with business dynamics, and that is the fact that Gates and Ballmer are still in charge. And if you look at the way corporations are generally run when they're run by the people who started them as opposed to later business teams, there is a much greater pride going on here. And the only way Office for Linux is ever going to show up is if Ballmer and Gates are willing to concede that they will not be the dominant force in the operating systems on the desktop. And I do not see that happening. I do not see that happening.
By the way, this article does not state that they're going to port Office. And nowhere do they mention Office.
Yeah, but basically anything that they do that isn't just some sort of conversion kit, you know, on how to get from Linux to Windows, they're not going to do anything to make the Linux operating system function better. Bottom line. I don't see them doing a browser. I don't see them doing anything. But you know, the big one, when it comes down to it, the big one is Office.
Yeah.
And it's the only one, frankly, that matters of the Microsoft suite. Because if you're going to go around Windows and go with Linux, the only thing that people are stuck with is Office.
And of Office, you really just talking Excel and Word, with the emphasis really on Word, although Excel has got a very strong. I don't see
PowerPoint.
Much.
PowerPoint. Is
PowerPoint is ubiquitous, but like Doc says, they're not doing much.
They're not doing much, but it is a must run for a lot of organizations. Currently.
Yeah, it is. And but the Access is. I don't like Access anyway, but it's just Access is still there, but it's. Is dead meat.
Well, the interesting thing about Access is that there are a lot of people, I hear from a lot of my readers all the time, that Access is a major sticking point. They want something with that interface, that easy point-and-click database creation interface. And it's one of the things that some of the open source things that we have out there, you know, MySQL and PostgreSQL and whatnot, they approach it, but it's not as nice. And Access is a nice way to create a tiny database for use inside, homegrown apps.
Yeah, for doing simple things.
That's it. And so that is a sticking point. So the whole Office suite is the key. And I do not see Microsoft giving up that ball anytime in the near future.
I have a tendency to agree with you on that.
The suggestion in the chat room is that let's put OpenOffice into C#, pump it via Mono back to them. Yeah, I like that. It's a good one.
Well, here's a what if type of scenario for you, Russ. You're saying that you don't believe Ballmer or Gates would react because making that product would somehow indicate that they are no longer the dominant player on the desktop. Let's be realistic here. 10 years from now, what kind of numbers do you think, let's talk about, the United States. Let's not talk about third world nations, because we know Microsoft is doomed in an awful lot of third world nations because of the software has already been pirated, and it's so, like China, you're either going to use pirated copy of Windows or you're going to use Linux. You're never going to go out and pay Microsoft $129.95 for the operating system. It's never going to happen. They've lost that battle already. So let's just talk about the United States. And let's talk about, you can expand it. We'll talk about the United States and countries where they have legal binding on patent and copyright. How much of a market share do you really think the Linux community is going to have on the desktop 10 years from now? Yeah, personally, I think if we hit, 10, 15%, that's going to be amazing. But still, that still means that Microsoft is going to have like 75% of the market.
See, 10 years from now, as far as I'm concerned, all bets are off.
We don't know what technology is going to be like 10 years.
10 years from now, let's put it this way. 10 years from now, I do not see a clear Microsoft lead in anything. That is not to say that it's going to be Linux that's going to be carrying the ball, but I don't see Microsoft carrying it. I'm not
10 years from now, half their employees will be cashing in their retirement stock, and the stock of Microsoft stock.
Still earning, they'll just print more. It's irrelevant.
They'll
just print more.
But the thing here, it's something else to consider. Like you said, we have talked about the fact that, and this was published inside that SEC filing a while ago for people who hadn't heard, that Microsoft makes most of its money from Windows and Office. As that market begins to erode, and I think we're seeing a much more powerful erosion than any 10 or 15% is going to be in 10 years, as that erodes, they're going to have their own series of problems because they're going to have to redefine the company because that is funding everything else they're doing. And this is not a simple thing to do. But frankly, I think we're going to see a major upheaval within 5 years, and what the average desktop, if there is a desktop, if the desktop isn't something that you wear on your waist or whatever by then, who knows? But the average desktop is going to be a very different beast than what we think of today. And just look at the history of the PC, for crying out loud. Nothing has stayed still for more than a couple of years. And I just don't see, if Microsoft is a big player 10 years from now, the theme of the corporation will be radically different than what it is today as far as where they're going to address the market.
Maybe. Maybe.
I have only one small other article.
Okay.
And that is this week's issue of InfoWorld at InfoWorld.com. His main topic is disruptive technologies. And while you're there, make sure you catch Rush Pavlicek's, our own Russ Pavlicek's article, where he puts his spin on that. Also, there's a particularly good story on disruptive technology by Steve Gilmore, and the name of that article is "And the Winner Is ... In this pageant, the runway is the intersection of technology, the marketplace, and public policy." And he talks about Tim O'Reilly and some of the main issues. And his chief disruptive technologist is either Dave Weiner, Tim O'Reilly, or Bill Gates. And he discusses that at length. It's a good article. And of course, don't forget to get Russ's article.
Okay. Kevin, do you have any new releases this week?
No new releases, but an interesting note. It has been released that the funder of the Xbox hacking contest was indeed Windows CEO Michael Robertson.
Yes, I think that's sort of a twist of the knife in the side of Microsoft. That's sort of ironic that it's the Windows guy. Very, very ironic.
And he has apparently volunteered to extend the deadline for the second half of the prize for another year. So hopefully somebody will get it working without any modifications to the Xbox.
Yep. Have you heard about the new specs on the PlayStation 3?
I've read some of the rumors.
The trillion operations per second?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be amazing. Can't wait to see that. Well, I tell you, one of the interesting things about doing a live broadcast is every once in a while you run into a proverbial train wreck. And we warned at the beginning of the show that we were trying to set up something that could turn into a train wreck because we hadn't thoroughly tested it prior to the show. And unfortunately, things are not running well in the hack test. We don't want to throw a server at you that'll fall over if you breathe on it. That's no fun. I want to be totally fair to Bob Toxin and really give him a fair shot. We were trying to set this up so it wouldn't impact the servers at work. And so he was actually setting it up on I think it was a DSL or cable connection at his home, and things aren't just working right. But what we're going to do, because it's already 9 o'clock, my apologies to all you listeners who are eagerly awaiting the opportunity to shoot your crossbows at this guy, you're going to have to do it another night. Because I want to give Bob the opportunity to set the server up properly and then give you all a fair opportunity to have a chance to hack the box. Because I have all the faith in the world at you that some of you people will at least be able to get to the point where you will at least trip the server off, if not to actually hack all the way through it. But my apologies to you all listening. So, if you will do us the favor of coming back same time next week, Tuesday, I know it's January, but I don't know the date. What's next Tuesday? The 14th of January. We'll have our next edition of the Linux Show, and we'll bring it to you once again live. Same place. Everybody come back. Tell 10 friends about the Linux Show. Once again, our audience is growing. Worldwide, we'll continue to have more and more people listening to us from Europe, and I don't get that. People getting up in the middle of the night to listen to this goofy show. I can understand you people in New Zealand because it's lunchtime. That's not such a big deal. But these people in Europe getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, boy, that's loyalty. So everybody, thank you for listening. We'll bring it to you again next week and many more weeks to follow. On behalf of the whole crew here at The Linux Show, thank you, and we're out of here.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make The Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms. So you need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? Well, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor. Yes, you too can sponsor The Linux Show. Here's an example. Insert your company name here. Is a valued sponsor of The Linux Show. Here's another example. Insert your company name here. Is bringing you this special segment of The Linux Show. Now, thanks for checking us out and sponsor The Linux Show.